Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, April 22nd. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into today. If you remember, a week ago, we were talking about Director Comey. Well, it was quite a week for the director, former director, because he started out with an interview, and by the end of the week, there were stories about investigations of whether or not he was leaking information to a friend or a professor. Also, by the end of the week, he and Mr. McCabe were calling each other liars. That's got to be fascinating. There's also a great story today from Representative Nunes about the Russian collusion investigations. We'll get into all of that. Trump and North Korea, very interesting developments. Beautiful week for many of us here in Texas with the Barbara Bush ceremonies, just absolutely beautiful ceremonies. But, of course, a college professor had to spoil everything with just vicious remarks about Barbara Bush and the Bush family. We'll talk a little bit about that. Mr. Pompeo is apparently going to have a vote on Monday. I hope it passes. I think the man is a good candidate. And President Macron of France is apparently getting along fairly well with President Trump these days, or so he says. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, it's beautiful here in North Texas. What's it like in New York?
Actually, it was a beautiful day, I have to say. And I was out. It was actually a beautiful weekend weather-wise in New York. Politically, I don't know. But it looks like we are past the really harsh and very long winter that we had. Not all that much precipitation, but the temperatures were terrible. Mm-hmm. And I think we're now going to look into spring, and we'll see some smiling faces, except the faces of the new left. I mean, they'll look.
They're never happy.
They look at moderate weather as a plot by the conservatives to disrupt the global warming
That's
business.
That's right. Well, Bill, I just wanted to take a quick minute and remember April 22nd, 1994. It was about this time of the day that we learned about the death of President Nixon. Obviously a very controversial fellow, but as time passes, he seems to be getting better measurements, if you will, from historians. And he'll never be a great president because of Watergate, but he'll get credit for a few things. And if you look at his record, in many ways, his record as a, with OSHA, the EPA, affirmative action, he turned out to be a lot more liberal than I think a lot of Republicans would admit, Bill.
Yes, and that, of course, disappointed a number of Republicans, but he did. He was also very publicly he was, of course, for the Second Amendment, but privately he was not. He was very anti-gun ownership. He called guns an abomination privately. He was a series of contradictions. As you said, very much a conservative in his early life and in his public statements. But when he got to be president, he was moderate. The EPA was founded. He also advanced affirmative action. He also hired, and this is very strange, he was caught on tape making a number of very offensive statements about different ethnic groups, especially Jews, and yet he made Henry Kissinger, a Secretary of State, some of his chief cabinet officers and advisors were Jewish. When Israel was in trouble, he came right to their aid without any hesitation, and yet he made these private statements. And we see this all the time in presidents. We see it all the time in public figures. I mean, Harry Truman, before he became president, had absolutely nothing positive on his record regarding race, and came from a border state, but he is the one who integrated the armed forces. You see contradictions like this in politics all the time.
Yeah, and sometimes that tells you that the man can grow, you know what I mean, grow in office. That's what I think it tells me, that the man can grow in office and at least, not be so tied down by whatever ideology he had. I mean, I think in the case of Richard Nixon with going to China, I mean, I remember that was very controversial.
Oh, yeah.
And then when wasn't he the one who removed us from the gold standard? I think that was also very controversial, too, as I recall. I remember reading that William F. Buckley wrote some very critical things of Richard Nixon, President Nixon, back then. But anyway, that's the way it is, as they say. Go ahead. Yeah, okay. Go ahead, please.
Well, a man of many sides. He could do some large things. The opening to China, still controversial, by the way.
Sure.
But it certainly was a major step. On the other hand, he could appoint mediocre Supreme Court justices. I think two of them were turned down by the U.S. Senate. He would do these little petty things that ultimately destroyed him. But if he did those same things and was a liberal Democrat, the public wouldn't have noticed as much, because the way the press handles these things is, if you're a Republican, you're judged by one standard, and if you're a Democrat, you're judged by another standard.
Yeah. No, I just thought he was a very interesting fellow, and I saw the story today that he had died on this day back in 1994, and I kind of remember exactly where I was, because we were driving to the ballpark with my parents, and I remember the breaking story on the pregame show about the death of President Nixon. But let's talk a little bit about this last week, Bill. When we left it last Sunday night, Mr. Comey was about to do an interview. He had a pretty amazing week. I mean, he started out with the interview, then he ended with Mr. McCabe and Mr. Comey calling each other liars. Now they're both going to be investigated, it looks like, for this or that. And then at the end of the week, you wrote an article today about Mr. Nunes, Representative Nunes, saying that the evidence, all this Russia collusion stuff, is not really real. I mean, it's just fascinating, all the stuff that's going on in Washington, Bill.
Well, it's become a soap opera. And I think that one of the things that may be happening here, I don't like May stories, actually, but the American people may be getting fed up with this. I think they want a president who is allowed to govern. They elected him. They want him to be free to govern. So far, no bombshells have been released. There doesn't seem to be any real collusion with Russia. Now we have the special counsel going into his lawyer's previous business dealings. What this has to do with the original commission for the special counsel, I don't know. But I do think that the American people are tired of it. If one wants to watch CNN, which I don't recommend for medical reasons, you watch, and it's the same story over and over again, how bad Trump is, how corrupt Trump is. I think the American people have inoculated themselves to this, which is why Trump's approval ratings keep rising. They're judging him by what he does. And so far, so good.
Well, I mean, he's done some good things, let's face it. I mean, this thing with North Korea that we'll talk about in a minute, I mean, that could be huge for any president who's able to change the situation with North Korea. But I found the case of Comey to be fascinating, because a week ago, just as you and I were talking a week ago, I think he was about to do the interview with ABC. And it seems like the more he spoke, Bill, the more people were shooting at him from all sides. I mean, he doesn't have any friends, as far as I can tell. I mean, he is in deep trouble right now, I think, Bill.
I think you're correct. I think that, I wrote at Urgent Agenda this week that people are wondering why all these attacks on Trump are not having the intended effect. And what I said, and I'll just repeat it, is that the American people don't expect the president to be an angel. But they do expect the FBI director to be an angel. And, there's kind of the notion that he is supposed to be above politics, above sleaze, above everything bad, and is supposed to be the role model. Well, it didn't work out. I mean, Trump is not, to put it mildly, a flawless character. I mean, this is a man.
No.
You can list many things negative about him. Man, you'd be here for a while. But we expect better of the FBI director than we're getting now in former Director Comey. It was not proper for him to write a book this soon after being fired. I mean, maybe later in life, if he wanted to reflect back, that's one thing. But he got into the fray, and that's not what we wanted in FBI directors.
No, and it's becoming quite apparent that, for example, there were problems, at least apparent to me, that there were problems with the email investigation. The Hillary Clinton email investigation, and now you've got an interesting situation, because now you have the former number one and the former number two calling each other liars. I mean, it's got to be fascinating for President Trump to watch this, Bill.
Oh, I'm sure he's having a good time. I really, I mean, you know, this is the best reality show in town.
Sure.
But I still, I still think he wishes it would go away because it is distracting from the presidency, and he has big things coming up. I mean, the negotiation with North Korea is one of the biggest diplomatic initiatives this country has launched in recent decades. And I think what is ironic about it is that the man who went to North Korea, met with the North Korean leader, and came back at least with some progress, is up for Secretary of State and may be defeated.
Mm. But I find the Democrats on this to be absolutely outrageous, Bill.
Oh, yes.
They're sitting there they're having a fight with Pompeo over gay marriage.
That's right.
Or even
gay
sex.
That's all they care about. You know.
And it's like I'm sitting there saying, you know, I'm saying to myself, well, wasn't gay marriage approved by the Supreme Court 3 years ago? I thought they made it legal.
Yes.
It's a domestic issue. And that's it. It's really not an issue. You can go to any district, any courthouse in the United States today and get a marriage license if two people of the same sex. And if anybody tries to stop you, you're going to win. Remember that case in Kentucky or whatever it was with that judge there. So, I mean, it's not even an issue in the United States. The fact that Pompeo on a personal level believes it's between a marriage is between a man and a woman. So are we going to do a religious test now on people?
That's absurd. And we're getting close to that, by the way. We really are getting very close to that. Canada has, in effect, a religious test on different federal programs in Canada. You have to sign a statement saying that you agree with a list of values, including, by the way, abortion. And if you don't sign the statement, you don't get the job. And that is, in a way, a religious test. That's very, very dangerous. The thing with Pompeo is, as you said, the Democratic Party has become a very small-minded kind of a local party, but it may still win elections. I mean, we've had this before. But the idea of trying to turn down a man like Mike Pompeo is to me absolutely un-American in the worst sense of the word, because it's going to hurt this country. Even if he is then confirmed on the floor of the Senate after losing in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he will still be diminished, and they should not want to do that to their own country. But you just get the feeling they don't care, that anything that will hurt the Trump administration is just fine for them.
Well, but then you have senators like Manchin and the fellow in Montana, the lady in Missouri, the fellow in Indiana, the fellow in Alabama. It hurts in those places if they don't support. I'm guessing it does, but maybe they don't care. They think they're going to win no matter what, Bill.
Well, I don't know what's in their minds, and I think it probably will hurt in those places. But on the other hand, they are under enormous pressure from within their own party to vote down Mike Pompeo, and they know that if they vote for him and that if he is not ratified or not confirmed, they will have a hard time within their own party. The Democratic Party today is a left-wing party. It is run by leftist radicals, and as far as they're concerned, some of these people who are called moderate Democrats are really just Republicans, and that's the way they see it.
Well, I you're probably right. I don't dispute that at all. But I'm just thinking they're saying, you know, a fellow like Manchin or, you know, some of the others, they could benefit back home if they simply supported this nomination. But, Bill, there's a larger issue about these nominations that I like to put on the table tonight, and that is the whole point of confirmation was not supposed to be to relitigate the election or to argue about, you know, issues like same-sex marriage. That's not really what this is for. This is supposed to be a look at the candidate that the president has nominated, and if he or she passes a basic standard of competence and resume or whatever, that it should go. But this idea that every time there's a Republican nomination that we get into an argument about abortion, about same-sex marriage. I mean, it's Secretary of State. What does that have to do with abortion? It's insulting to people to have to watch this. It's like, you know, please show more respect for the American people, Bill.
I think you're absolutely right, and they just don't care. The Democratic Party now is playing to its base. which is a fairly narrow base, but you have to get past that base to get anything done in the party and to get any position of the party. This is not the party of Roosevelt, Truman, and Kennedy anymore. Jack Kennedy couldn't come anywhere near a presidential nomination with this party today. And they, I think, are hoping that they'll get past this with a couple of statements by Democrats, offensive statements, and that people will forget on Election Day. It is up to the Republicans to make sure that people don't forget.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. But I just find this whole thing, this whole debate over Pompeo, if we were talking about, you know, if there was a problem in his background or something like that, fine. I mean, that's what the investigation is for, or the confirmation. But to sit there and have this man get into a debate with the fellow from New Jersey, Booker, about
Cory Booker.
Gay sex? I mean, they're talking
yes.
about gay sex. I mean, you got to be – what is the world thinking about this bill? I mean, you got these people around the world are saying, what are you guys talking about?
Cory Booker is running for president in 2020, and it was clear that he was attempting to appeal to the Democratic Party base and didn't care about the Pompeo confirmation. It is just ridiculous to hear the Democratic Party whining about Pompeo as if he's some sort of a warmonger, which he is not. You know, it's anybody to the left of, or rather to the right of Barack Obama is considered unacceptable. And that's not what these confirmation hearings should be about.
Yeah. Well, maybe another reason not to have issues like same-sex marriage and abortion go to the Supreme Court is these kinds of confirmations, because when the Supreme Court says or legalizes same-sex or legalizes abortion, then it is, you know, you can then you can have a religious test, because they say, well, it's the law of the land. You know what I mean? So maybe if
sure.
these issues were settled by voters, we wouldn't have these debates over a Secretary of State bill.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, the discussion of these issues has gotten completely out of hand, and anybody who disagrees with the Democratic Party is immediately labeled a bigot.
Right.
And that
That's
is
it.
No different than old-time McCarthyism. It's the exact same idea. Just smear the person, don't deal with the argument, and bring him down and destroy him, and then we will be on top. But it's a sad day when a man like Mike Pompeo has to go around begging for votes. This is not a mediocre nominee. He's a substantial nominee. And for the president to say, not the president, but some senators on the Democratic Party saying, well, yes, he's brilliant and he's expert, but he's too hawkish. You know, we're really worried about that. The president makes the foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
And Pompeo is not going to make the administration any more hawkish. It's just he should be confirmed immediately, as the liberal Washington Post recommended, and then we'll go on from there.
That's it. No, I just think it's a terrible spectacle. I understand there's a vote tomorrow, and the
yes.
vote is in the committee, right? So the
so
committee
Senate
is probably
Foreign Relations Committee.
Yeah, I'm assuming this is 10. They usually have, you know, 10-9 or 11-10 or something like that is usually the makeup of one party
yes.
versus the other. I know Rand Paul was saying he was going to vote against him, and that has me also upset, because I'm not, you know, Rand Paul doesn't want to talk. I guess he doesn't want to vote for him because of torture or some other, or because of the Iraq War. Come on. I mean, that's pretty
well,
silly,
too. Well, yes, he feels, he's too easy on military intervention. You know, the president is going to get somebody who is generally in his camp politically. That's that's the only kind of people who got appointed to these positions. It may not have been at one time in American history, but it is today. And if you look back on the nominations of public officials for the cabinet by Barack Obama, he got his way every time. And And by substantial numbers, the position of most Republicans was he's entitled to the cabinet he wants unless there is something seriously wrong. And that's
well, look at Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State. What experience did she, what national security experience did she have? Compare Hillary Clinton to Mike Pompeo. I mean, it's a big gap between these two. And yet she got in by a substantial number for the reason you just stated. People said, hey, that's his choice. Let him have his choice.
Yes.
So I'm disappointed with these Democrats. They're really turning me off, Bill.
Although, I agree. And we have to think ahead to what would happen if Mike Pompeo gets turned down. Well, I think what would happen is he would remain at CIA, and the president would use him for whatever function he wishes. I mean, if he wants a delegation to go to North Korea to negotiate, he can appoint Mike Pompeo. He can appoint anybody he wants. And I would imagine that we would have a situation, which we have had several times in recent American history, of a Secretary of State who's kind of a figurehead, or no Secretary of State at all. I don't think there's any requirement that Trump nominate another person. But we have had several occasions where the Secretary of State has been a figurehead. During World War II, Cordell Hull was Secretary of State, a very fine man. But it was really Roosevelt who was Secretary of State. He was his own Secretary of State. And Hull had very, very little power. And remember that during the Nixon administration that we just talked about, when Henry Kissinger was National Security Advisor and William Rogers was Secretary of State, no one had any doubt as to who had the real power. It was Kissinger. And Rogers, while not exactly a figurehead, was a diminished person. This is not uncommon in American history.
Well, you're right. It's not. And I was thinking about Rogers, too, when you were talking about Secretary of State Rogers with President Nixon. But I just think this is, you know, these are the wrong fights to pick with the president over the
cabinet.
You can fight with lots of other things, but to get into fights over the cabinet, I actually do think that this sort of gets back to what you said earlier about people getting fed up with these attacks on Trump. I mean, look, you don't have to be a fan of Trump. I was not a fan of Trump in the primaries, but he won. He's the president. There's things that he's doing that I really like. There are times he drives me nuts with some of the things he says and some of the tweets and all of that. But he is the president. He is entitled to his team. And when I see this kind of nonsense, I feel like just saying, come on, Democrats, grow up. Grow up and behave like senators, not like a bunch of, you know, pander politicians, Bill.
Well, I think that's absolutely on the head. And I think when you use the term grow up, you're hitting on an issue that I think is a growing issue in American life generally. And that is, this has become a very, very immature country. I mean, the level of debate, as compared to what I remember when I was much younger, is very low and on a childlike level. Now, I'm sure you're aware of the proposal coming from the Democratic Party that the voting age be lowered to 16. And, of course, the argument they will raise is, well, it's their future. I mean, why shouldn't they have a vote in it? Well, under that logic, we can lower the voting age to 2.
Anybody can vote.
Yes, and tell a two-year-old, here's a red ball and here's a blue ball. Which ball do you like, Tommy? You know, have an election that way. I mean, it's gotten completely ridiculous. Youth orientation is a gimmick that was started in the 1960s. And it was really a Hollywood idea that the country was becoming youth-oriented. When was it not youth-oriented? I mean, I don't remember any time in American history. We've always been a kind of a youngish country. But we were told that we have to listen to young people. They would make these very, very pompous statements like the strawberry statement. And after a while, we came, I think, as a nation to the conclusion that these were just a bunch of obnoxious kids and that they had no particular wisdom. And I think that's always the case. And I think one of the reasons we have, you know, required age limits for voting is because we recognize the fact that it's a mature exercise, or at least it should be a mature exercise.
Right. I think we should do like the Catholic Church, Bill. You know, they can take communion at age 7. We should do like confirmation, and at age 7 you can vote.
Yeah.
That's it. You can vote at age 7 because something like that. So, I mean, no, but I agree with you. In fact, I was always skeptical about lowering to 18. I still think it should be 21.
I think it should be 50.
Yes. The older I get, the more I agree with you on that. When you see candidates, when you see people like Senator Booker in the U.S. Senate, I'm beginning to wonder if we shouldn't also have a minimum age to be. We should take it from 30 to a much older, because Senator Booker is really a major clown. I mean, I hate to say that about a senator.
He wants to be president.
That's right. I mean, I can just imagine. I can just imagine that. Bill, let me take a little break. We're going to hear from my friend Carlos Guedes, And then we'll be back with Bill for another segment. We got a lot to get into with Bill over the next segment. Be right back.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sissiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sissiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information. If you see there under the show description for today's program with Bill, and just click on that, it'll take you to his website where he's got all of the schedules around Dallas. He's fascinating. I mean, we've gone to many of his shows, and the fellow is—he's a great friend of our show. He's from Venezuela, as you know. He's also very politically oriented because of everything happening in his home country of Venezuela. Just an absolutely wonderful man, Carlos Guedes, and his wife Luisa, who's always with him when he's playing at these particular places around Dallas. Let's get back to Bill. Bill, I was thinking about Venezuela and what a horrible mess that is. You know, with my friend Carlos, every time I see him, Venezuela is actually making. You know, we thought Cuba was pretty bad, but it's horrible down there, Bill. It's just absolutely terrible. I don't know how much longer that can go on. I mean, it's horrible.
I think it is horrible. And, you bring up Venezuela, and I should have noted this, but there was some position that the Venezuelan delegation got this week at the United Nations. And people are just laughing their heads off, laughing in a sad way, because the country is just falling apart. The government is falling apart. It's an authoritarian government. It can't get anything done. And the country's economy is collapsing. It's a terrible, terrible tragedy brought about, of course, by Hugo Chavez, who became a hero on the American left. And now that Venezuela is collapsing, you don't hear the American left talking about Venezuela anymore. And apparently he's been taking all the off all the maps in the in the headquarters of the Screen Actors Guild. The country it's kind of faded even from consciousness. It's a very, very sad state of affairs, as you point out.
It really is, because it shouldn't be that way. I mean, this is actually used to be a pretty prosperous country until it decided to try.
Country.
Yeah, and oil had a wonderful middle class. I mean, it's just a terrible situation. Of course, there's a new president in Cuba, Bill. I'm sure you are anxious to know where he stands on issues. He did give a speech, I guess, to, you know, introduce himself, and he says he will consult with Raul Castro if he has to make any major decisions. So I guess we know how independent he is.
Oh, well, I mean, this guy apparently has been a Castroite through most of his political career.
Yeah.
And there was no pressure brought on Cuba by the Obama administration to become more of a democracy in exchange for American recognition. Nothing. I mean, I don't think that Barack Obama had any problem with Castro and any problem with Castro's dictatorship. I think we're learning just how totalitarian the political left is in this country. But the reality is they have not made any real progress since the American recognition. And this fellow who is now the new leader of Cuba is an old Castroite. So where's the change? Where's the social improvement?
No, we've gone from an 86-year-old communist to a 57-year-old communist. I mean, that's the transition, you know. But it's the same old system. It's very sad, also like Venezuela. Bill, I want to talk a little bit about Barbara Bush and this college professor, and then we'll get back to some of the other stuff. But, I was a big fan of Barbara Bush. I thought she was a very neat lady, and I thought the ceremonies of her funeral were just great, and the way the family acted. I just thought it was great to watch. And, you know, she's obviously very popular here in Texas, Barbara Bush, and the Bush family. But in the middle of this beautiful ceremony about her life, a college professor from the West Coast decides to take a shot at this lady, and it's pretty sick, Bill. I just don't know what gets into a person's head that he or she chooses to attack a 92-year-old mother, grandmother, because she disagrees with her son's Iraq policy. I mean, it's just I don't understand how that happens, Bill. Because I would never criticize somebody's mother because I disagree with the, you know, her son's, I mean, policy. So it's hard for me to comprehend this, Bill.
Well, the left has become completely irrational, completely irresponsible. And if we did that on our side toward a Democrat, it would be the racism and sexism and this
right.
and the rheumatism. And,
right.
I mean, the New York Times would go berserk. But this woman is claims to be a tenured professor at Fresno State College. She published these really obscene remarks about Barbara Bush, and there was, of course, a backlash on part of alumni who apparently are very powerful at that school and control a great deal of the financing. And yet she hasn't budged at all, nothing.
Well, I'm just so disappointed because there's nothing you can do to her. I think you pointed that out. This week at Urgent Agenda, and look, I believe in tenure. I guess tenure is necessary. I believe in that. But I'm not so sure tenure was intended. Again, I don't really know, but it's hard for me to believe that tenure was intended to protect a professor from something like this.
If it is,
I'm very disappointed. This is not political freedom. This is just utterly irresponsible. If she had said that about anybody, it would have been seen as irresponsible, Bill.
I think that's absolutely correct. And, you know, you wonder how somebody like this gets hired. I mean, you know, even if she has the freedom of speech, let's concede for a moment that she was protected by the Constitution in what she said. But even if that is the case, her character, the way she speaks, the way she writes, the constant cursing, why would any college hire somebody like that to teach students?
Yeah, I mean, if I had a son in one of her classes, I would have to take an opinion on that, because you're right. I mean, this woman is vicious.
Absolutely, and she is representative of that class of militant left-wing academics who are vicious. There was a report today that the homes of several NRA, National Rifle Association executives, were personally picketed by some college professors. Now, you know, I think that you draw the line at someone's home. I mean, there may be children there. There may be wives there. You don't have to disrupt somebody's home life to make a political point. But I think the notion of our universities, of what they are and what they should be, will become a major issue in coming years, and I would not be surprised if there were attempts by Congress to cut way back on federal aid to higher education outside the sciences in reaction to the virtual collapse of the American university.
Well, I know some states are doing that. I know Indiana, I think, had done that. Utah had done that. But to me, this woman here, this goes beyond a political difference. This is a vicious attack, and I just don't, you know, it doesn't speak well of this college professor to do what she did. I just think it's like, come on, you know, why go after the mother because you disagree with their son? I have no problem with people criticizing any president, but it would have never occurred to me, for example, when President Clinton's mom passed away, to attack her because of his health care policy. Or when President Carter's mom passed away, to criticize him or her because of his Iran policy. I mean, you know, there's a point where common sense tells you you don't cross this line, and this lady doesn't have any common sense, Bill.
Well, no common sense at all. And when you look back at her other tweets, which is the way I guess we judge people these days, involve a whole bunch of issues and bigotry, anti-white bigotry, anti-Semitic bigotry, anti-straight bigotry,
sure.
And yet she boasts on Twitter that she can't be fired, which is not true. There are procedures for getting rid of a tenured professor. And now I think it's kind of in limbo for a while. I did see a story just before going on the air that alumni were still up in arms over her behavior and over the fact that she's still teaching there. Let's see what happens. There may eventually be enough of a backlash against this kind of individual that the schools and universities will become more careful in who they hire.
Well, they should. They should, because the people who are paying, the irony of all these people is there are a bunch of left-wingers, but they have a job because of people who pay taxes and work in the private sector generally. So it's like, you know, it's like there's a contradiction there. I mean, these people hate capitalism, or they hate the free market system, they hate the United States, but why don't they go back to the country? I mean, I don't know what country this lady came from. Why didn't she go back to that country, Bill?
That's right. Well, that's right. And what I think they do also is they take advantage not only of our formal freedoms, but the fact that we actually enforce our formal freedoms in this country, and we allow people a great leeway. If you even criticize them, you're called a fascist. So, you know, if it's going to happen anyway, go ahead and do what you want to do. But the deterioration in this country in its common language in standards of deportment is one of the things behind this, and one
That's
of
right.
the things that has caused this.
Oh, I agree. I agree. There's such a difference in the country, and all you have to do is watch these black and white movies from the 40s and 50s and
yes.
see the way people
mm-hmm.
behaved. And it's like you're almost like you're watching and you're like it's from another planet, Bill. It's like watching something from another planet. The behavior of people, the even political debates. If you go back and watch the Nixon Kennedy debates, I mean, there was such a level of professionalism there and respect. We don't have that anymore, Bill.
No, you bring up the Nixon Kennedy debates. You're absolutely correct. I recall watching them. And whether you like the particular candidate or not, they were impeccably courteous to each other, and they had a real discussion about the policy choices facing the United States. Nowadays, people seem to go out of their way, but especially on the left, I have to say,
mm-hmm.
especially on the left, to be as vicious and as outrageous as possible, to violate social norms, to show contempt for the American people. And I do believe that eventually they'll get their comeuppance, but I wish they would come up faster, or whoever comes up on them would come up faster, because I think they're hurting the country.
Well, I think this college professor, to say something else about her before we move on, this college professor even said something about Trump voters. I remember reading something about that too, you know, where she was attacking Trump voters, calling them idiots or whatever. I mean, come on, is that really necessary? I mean, it's not to me.
We've had rough language in politics before. Nixon, when he ran for vice president in 1952 on the Eisenhower ticket, pledged that if the ticket got in, that it would bring good language back to the White House, because it was understood that Harry Truman was a pretty hard-cursing guy. But the trouble is these are not isolated incidents. This is widespread acceptable behavior, and
mm-hmm.
it's going to kill us eventually. It really is. You know, one of the gems we had in this country was our university system. Well, what happens if all the schools deteriorate into this? Many kids who ordinarily would come here from foreign countries won't come.
Well, and what are these kids learning? That's another thing too.
That's
I mean, what
right.
what are they? What kind of education they're getting? I always thought you went to college to not just to get an education, but to become a young adult and you know, learn some, you know, behave correctly. I don't know.
Yes.
It's really disappointing. I'm glad that I'm out of that time in my life right now. My three sons are out of that, but it's just terrible to see what is happening. Bill, let me go back to Comey and McCabe for a second before
sure.
we get to North Korea. I actually believe that both Mr. Comey and Mr. McCabe could be facing some legal problems. And I think McCabe is, and Comey is going to be investigated for apparently leaking to this college professor that eventually passed it on to the New York Times.
Yes.
If those two, if they're both, you know, indicted for leaking, I just think this is just going to open up a lot of other areas, because they're going to talk about other people, Bill.
Oh, absolutely, especially if they're under legal threat. I mean, there may be some real revelations about some people in government and some people who aren't in government but who are kind of hangers-on. And it can go on and on, and it can also lead to an even greater sense of revulsion by the public that's present today. And then the question would be, well, who do we turn to as a nation? And I haven't got any ideas.
No, it's going to be ugly. And that's why I almost think the best thing that Mr. Mueller could do to the country right now, if he doesn't really have anything, and I don't think he does, the best thing he could do right now is to say, look, we've looked into this. There's nothing here. There's certainly nothing here that would lead me to reverse an election, which is what this would be. And let's just move on. I've got nothing. Let's move on. And if people want to settle this in the political arena, that's the place where it should be settled, Bill.
I agree. Many people think the special counsel is a very bad idea because it is completely disruptive of the government. And after all, the government is there to serve us. But I think this has gone on much too long already. Nothing has shown up. The idea of collusion between Trump and Russia was far-fetched to begin with, and he has actually developed on his watch the harshest anti-Russian policies we've had since the Cold War. So I don't know what they're going to hang on him.
Well, and what exactly is the collusion? I mean, this
That's
is
right.
the other thing, too. I mean, what exactly did they agree with the Russians to do? I mean, this idea that you had people from the Trump camp, you know, meeting in private with people from the Kremlin and doing what? I mean, what exactly? I mean, this is the thing that it's like, sure, I mean, this is a great novel, spy novel, but beyond
yes.
that, I don't think it makes any sense, Bill.
It doesn't make sense. Excuse me. I have no doubt that there were some talks, but there were always talks between the team of a new president before inauguration and foreign countries, especially to the most important foreign countries. And for goodness sake, I mean, Barack Obama, when he was running for office, visited Germany and made a political speech at the Brandenburg Gate. Isn't it wonderful? He's Barack. He's come to see us. He's come to lay hands upon us. Everyone was sitting there worshiping Barack Obama. But I don't see any signs of actual collusion, no.
No, I just don't even know what it could be. I mean, did Putin want this candidate or that candidate? I don't know that he cares that much, frankly, who won the election. I really don't, because Putin is out for Putin, and he'll deal with whoever he has to deal with. So that's why I don't really see what the big deal is. But I just think this whole scandal, now you have Giuliani, mayor or former mayor Giuliani,
yes,
coming in, and, you know, I heard somebody say on Friday that maybe this is the beginning of the end, that Giuliani is coming in to cut a deal with Mueller to end this thing. I hope that's true, Bill.
I hope so, too. And, he knows the territory. Giuliani himself, before becoming mayor of New York, was a United States attorney. And it may very well be that this will be the beginning of a real function for him in the Trump administration. Now, he had wanted to be Secretary of State, and there was too much pushback within Trump's staff, and I can understand that. He really had neither the experience nor the temperament for the job. But I think if Trump really wanted to make some mischief, and if Pompeo were turned down, he could appoint Giuliani. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Democrats would then be in the position of having to turn down two nominees for what is essentially a bipartisan post. He could do that, Trump can. Another thing that could happen is that Giuliani could come in, work with the special prosecutor to close it down, and then perhaps Jeff Sessions might feel that Giuliani is getting all the sunshine, and Jeff Sessions may be forced out as attorney general, even without being fired. And Giuliani, being highly qualified, could be nominated for that. Or we could both be wrong on this, and maybe Giuliani is just coming in for a few weeks to clean things up.
Well, whatever. If he cleans up the situation with Mueller, I think that would be good for the country, because this is not helping the country. This constant investigation of the president over this and all these leaks. There was a story from from Mr. Mueller's office saying, or press release saying, hey, don't believe all these things you're reading. Most of them are not true, which is interesting also, Bill.
Very much so. Look, the thing is a complete muddle right now. We have been promised bombshell after bombshell. The James Comey book, it isn't even a cat pistol. I mean, nothing. There's nothing there. And now also the reporters are hanging out, waiting for every word by Stormy Daniels. That's
yes.
what this has deteriorated into. And yet at the same time, the Democratic Party stands accused in the public of ignoring very serious charges against Bill Clinton. And that will come up.
Yes, I just find this whole thing ridiculous. Now, I have to confess, sometimes Trump, the way he reacts, he makes things worse.
Absolutely.
You know, it would be helpful if Trump would actually stay away from the tweet for a couple of weeks and just kind of let Giuliani take care of it.
I think he should go to Georgetown Hospital and be detweeted. I think there's an operation for that.
I hope so, would be helpful.
You know, he should also be learning from watching Hillary Clinton make a fool of herself. I mean, you know, what Hillary Clinton is doing in her magical mystery tour is to show people why they were right in not voting for her.
This latest one that they didn't want me to be president. Who didn't?
Yes,
the voters?
Who's they? I mean, I'd like to know who they is. I mean,
that's right.
But she did this even when she was first lady, when these charges came up about Clinton. Remember, she went on a Today show and talked about the great right-wing conspiracy. Apparently, the right-wing in America is in cahoots with Clinton's former girlfriends. I mean, the conservative movement isn't smart enough to do that. They really aren't. And it's the same old stuff from her that anything that happens bad, it's the result of a conspiracy somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. A couple of foreign policy stories, Bill, here at the end. North Korea, of course. We'll get to that in a second. But it looks like the president of France and President Trump seem to be getting along just fine. You know, this was not supposed to happen, especially after the Paris climate deal went down. But I think Macron's under a lot of trouble in Paris because he has a lot of protests and he's trying to reform the French economy, which is not exactly an easy thing to do. So he's under
difficult.
A lot of trouble himself.
He is. And also, traditionally, French leaders have been difficult to deal with. It's almost a required personality that the French leader is the last one to come aboard. Margaret Thatcher once advised that, well, in the end, the French will be with you. And that usually is the case. But before they're with you, you get to be 85. That's the problem. But this guy, he may very well be sincere in his approach toward Trump, I mean, highly respectful, or he could just be playing a very shrewd political game. And that is trying to show how fair he is toward Trump before aligning with the rest of Europe and lowering the boom. I have to give Macron the benefit of the doubt on this. I think he is sincere that he believes he can work with Trump.
Well, he has his own immigration problems
in
France, and some of these leaders over there have a lot of immigration problems, and it's just fascinating what's happening in Europe. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing Trumpies growing in Europe, or candidates like Trump, at least when it comes to foreign policy, because look at Sweden, you know, with all the violence they're having. I mean, Sweden was supposed to be, this is the country of ABBA, you know, this is the country of ABBA, you know, dancing
and
queen.
And it's a paradise.
I mean, it's a paradise. And
it's a paradise. You could drive through peaceful Stockholm in your Volvo listening to ABBA.
Right, and nothing would ever happen to you.
Now you have really a very bad situation in Sweden. You know, we're proper to laugh at it because they're so pompous about their wonderfulness. But the reality is there are parts of Sweden where the police cannot go without an escort, where the streets are controlled by youth gangs. And still they keep on doing these things. Sweden is a perfect example of a failed immigration policy.
Absolutely. I mean, if you take a failed immigration policy, and you combine with that a country that doesn't have any babies, pretty soon they're going to have a problem like they're having in all of these Scandinavian countries where they don't have
That's
enough
right.
people of their own, and their people are coming from the outside. I don't have a problem with people coming from the outside. I mean, technically, I came to the United States as an immigrant, so I'm not. I mean, I don't think the problem is immigration. The problem is if people don't want to integrate to your way of life or your way of thinking, eventually that's a clash, and you cannot have that.
Oh, absolutely.
There.
Well, the whole idea, I mean, look at the motto of the United States, e pluribus unum, out of many, one.
Sure.
And that is
that's
supposed
right.
to be the ideal in the United States, and we are getting away from that ideal, and it is dangerous. Look, I mean, look at what's happening. If you look at the statistics in Europe, it won't be long before the Muslim vote will control European elections, and that will really, I think, be the end of any special relationship we have with Europe.
Well, yes. I mean, I think you're exactly right. Bill, I think the big story next week, aside from all these other things going on, has to be North Korea, because they have apparently made a major concession, and they're going to be getting together with President Trump. I don't expect President Trump to win the Nobel Peace Prize, but maybe he should, Bill. If he pulls this out, maybe he should.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That is a discussion that is being held, and you hear it all the time, and you see it on the Internet all the time. And the so-called smart money is going with the idea that no matter what he does, they will never give him the Nobel Peace Prize. Because the Nobel Peace Prize, people would be shocked to find how it's given. It's given by a bunch, apparently, of retired Norwegian parliamentarians.
Right.
These are people who sit around and after retirement and read the good book, which to them is Das Kapital. It is the Bible. And they can then give Nobel Prizes to insignificant people or to failures. Or in the case of Barack Obama, they gave him the Nobel Prize after 2 days in office. I mean, this was the special Nobel for showing up. You know, it's the dream of every kid growing up in the world to get the Nobel Prize for showing up.
Well, that's what I mean. They gave him the MVP before the season started.
That's
what
exactly
happened with President Obama. Bill, as you look at next week, all kinds of crazy things happening. What are you going to be looking at? What are some of the stories that you'll be looking at next week at Urgent Agenda?
Well, first of all, is the Pompeo nomination. It
yes.
comes up this week. I think the committee votes tomorrow. Now, if the committee turns them down, that is not fatal. It can be brought to the floor by the majority leader. I think he's going to do it. The Democrats are going to try to obstruct that, apparently, and I hope they do because they'll make complete fools of themselves. On the Senate floor, the issue is whether enough Democrats can be turned. He needs, I think, one or two more votes to be assured. And the heat will be on these moderate Democrats. And I think Trump has basically said if they do not vote for Pompeo, it will be a campaign issue, and it should be a campaign issue. And aside from that, just the ongoing political situation in the United States and its deterioration into what we have now and the deterioration of the American press. I think some of Trump's attacks on the press are beginning to pay off. I think people are looking at their behavior and saying, yes, he's right. It's a terrible situation. There are so many things going on in the world that are important that we don't even have to make a list. We'll just enter a few items and others will come to our attention. It's a very, very strange time in that regard.
Well, it's a very dangerous world. And to think that there are people in the U.S. Senate who do not want to vote for Mr. Pompeo because of gay sex, it just leaves you, you know, thinking what in the heck are these people doing? Because this is it is just unbelievable to me. It just seems incredible to me that that's what the issue is. It's just unbelievable.
Well, it's not only that. It's the whole deportment of the Democratic Party in believing that if Pompeo is confirmed, we'll have World War III. He is probably pursuing the sanest policy, which is power for peace, which won us the Cold War without having to fight a real war. And these people just don't understand that. I do feel that the campaigns against him are being led, except for the few kooky Republicans, are being led by the left wing of the Democratic Party, which doesn't want this country to be strong anyway.
Well, you could probably survive Senator Paul's defection if you have a few other Democrats. I think that maybe that can be done, but I'm going to be very disappointed if some of these so-called red state Democrats don't vote for Pompeo, because I don't know what in the world they're expecting, Bill. I mean, it's just, come
yes.
on, you know, this is too much. This is way too much. I mean, this is not an election. This is a confirmation. This is not an election. We had an election. Now let's have a confirmation, Bill.
That's exactly right, and I do hope that the Republicans, if Pompeo is turned down, if the Republicans know how to exploit this, because it's a very exploitable issue. It really does define the difference between the two parties. So it should be an exciting week on that alone.
Absolutely, and as always, we'll keep up with Urgent Agenda, and I thank you so much for joining us, and I think we've got already enough to get started next week.
We do, and we may have to publish an annex.
That's right. We'll have to do an extension of the show because there's so much to. We'll have to do updates during the week because there's so much going on, Bill.
right.
Well, thank
Absolutely.
You for your time as always, and again, keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda.
Well, thank you, Silvio, and I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, always enjoy chatting with him on Sundays as we look back at the big stories of the week. Lots of them coming up next week. It's just an amazing time to be doing a radio show. You think of all the stuff that is going on around the world. It's just absolutely, absolutely incredible. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your time. Enjoy your evening with the rest of the weekend, as they say. I think we make it rain here. I'm not sure, but it looks a little cloudy outside. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.